Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers about their first time experiences to prove to you that anyone can run a marathon. My name is Taylor, and on today's episode, we are breaking down my fifth marathon. I know it feels like we just did a marathon breakdown, but that's because I ran the Richmond Marathon 5 weeks after I ran Chicago and only found out that I was running it 3 weeks before. So we're going to break down the whole story, and I'm going to get a little sentimental at the end about this, but this is episode 100, and from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for sticking around for this long, whether this is the first episode you're listening to or you've been there since marathon number one. And I want to remind you that anyone can run a marathon. And if you're here, that means that you're taking steps to better yourself. And I am so happy that you're here. Without further ado, let's break down Richmond. This is my fifth marathon story. All right. Well, you know what we got to do. We got to take it back to tell this story because it has been a heck of a year for me. And Richmond was really the bow on top of just a really frustrating and really incredibly rocky year that was 2025. So taking it back to November of last year, which was my previous marathon PR, I ran a 4:49 at the City of Oaks Marathon here in Raleigh. And I knew coming into 2025 that I wanted to get faster. I was like, this is my year to get stronger and faster as a runner. I feel like I understand the marathon distance now that I've got a couple under my belt. I want to figure out how to do this fast. So coming off of that marathon, I was feeling very confident. I had a time goal in mind for the Eugene Marathon in April coming off of November. I wanted to run a 4:15. That feels a little aggressive given that I ran a 4:49, but I was able to shave 30 minutes off of my first marathon from first marathon to second marathon just by being consistent. So I felt like if I had 5 months and I could really commit to strength training and I could really commit to speed work and doing the things that I need to do to get faster, that I could shave another 30 minutes off of my marathon time. That's the headspace that I was in going into 2025. And then we know the story of Eugene. I was feeling really confident going into Eugene. The first couple of weeks were great, but then I hurt my foot and I ignored it for too long. Ended up having to see a bunch of different doctors to try and figure it out. And by the time I had figured it out, I had lost like 8 weeks of training and I decided to run Eugene just as a party pace run just to do it because Eugene was my hometown. It was really important to me. I was running with family and we ended up just doing what we could. Happy accident. I ended up running with a TikTok friend that I was able to meet at the race. Hi, Colin. And it was incredible. I loved being able to salvage that experience and make it something bigger than my pity party, bigger than myself. And it made me realize that I need to be very intentional about doing more marathons and more races with people because I loved that experience and I want to help more runners get across the finish line. That motivation pulled me to Chicago. Even though I was injured, I was running Chicago with my mom. So I had that like sense of purpose of running with somebody else and getting them across the finish line. But this whole year, I was really struggling with not being able to work on that time goal that I was feeling really confident about earlier in the year. I had to shift every single goal to being healthy and supporting other people. And while that was incredibly fulfilling for me, I realized that my own personal goals also matter a lot to me. And I was really disappointed that in 2025, I wasn't going to get to take a stab at this because I knew in 2026, I was hoping to take a break, at least an extended break from marathoning. So it felt like I had kind of missed my opportunity to hit that 4:15. So when I started training for Chicago, I didn't train for time. I trained at my mom's pace. My goal was to get her across the finish line feeling healthy and happy. And for me, my goal was to get back to running pain-free. Because if you remember from when I talked about my fourth marathon, I did not go into that block running pain-free. I was still having some pain in my knee. The foot pain had gone away, but I still was having some pain in my knee as a result of like changing my running form when my foot was injured. So it felt like this had all been lingering for over 8 months at that point. And I couldn't figure it out. I was really convinced at that point, even though it probably sounds dramatic, but I was convinced that I wasn't going to be able to run normally moving forward because even on the runs that were incredibly painful, my gait felt different, my cadence felt different. I just didn't feel like myself when I was running, and I was really worried that I was never going to feel like myself running again. I started training for Chicago in June. I had my first pain-free run through the Chicago training block in August. After August, the thoughts started to creep back into my head. Can I, if I've truly party paced Chicago, one, is it smart to run another marathon right after I run Chicago? But two, can I use this fitness and maybe go for some sort of time goal? Now, at this point, I knew that 4:15 was a little aggressive given the year that I had had, but I was like, maybe a 4:45 or maybe a 4:40, something like that would be reasonable because that would still be a PR for me. But as quickly as I was having those thoughts, I was also like pushing them away because I kept thinking this isn't smart. I just came off an injury. There's no way I should be running two marathons back to back, even if I'm party pacing and racing one. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But again, I ran two marathons this year for somebody else and something was just eating at me to do something for myself, because when I ran my first marathon, I make this joke, but I'm incredibly serious about it. I feel like I existed as a different person before I ran my first marathon and then after I ran my first marathon. It changed me as a person to push through something hard like that. And I was looking for that same thing this year. I was looking for the next challenge. And even though I loved those two experiences with Colin and my mom, I really was hoping that I could have one race this year where I could do something for myself and I could prove to myself that I can keep doing hard things even after an injury, even with everything that this year has thrown at me. That being said, I didn't train for Chicago for time. I trained to get my mom across the finish line. So by the time that I got an opportunity to run the Richmond Marathon, which was 3 weeks out from running Richmond, 2 weeks after I'd ran the Chicago Marathon, I really didn't have much time to practice my pace and see, like, I didn't even have time to really understand or test out a realistic time goal for myself. I had no idea what I was capable of when I was able to get an opportunity to run Richmond. It was, like I said, 2 weeks after I'd ran Chicago, where I really hadn't ran much because I thought I was done marathoning for the year. So I had done like a couple of run club runs and an 8 mile long run just to kind of shake the legs out the week and a half after Chicago. But really, I hadn't done much. So when I found out that I had 3 weeks to wrap my head around not only running another marathon, but also to test out paces that I had a hypothesis around that I thought that I could do, but I wasn't 100% sure, I was like, I gotta figure out what a reasonable time goal is here in a really short period of time. So I talked through it with my coach. We had kind of landed on like a 4:35, 4:36 as a reasonable time goal for me. I felt like I wanted to put the A goal at 4:30 though, even though those were pretty aggressive paces for me for where I was at the time. But 4:30, I felt like if I have the perfect day, I feel like I could run a 4:30. But of course, we set those ABC goals for a reason. So 4:30 was the A goal, but the B goal was just anything under a 4:49. If after the year I've had, it would be awesome to PR in any sense, like in any way would be a win for me. So I knew it was a bit of a stretch to hit that A goal, but that's why we had those ABC goals, is so you have something else to shoot for. So basically what those 3 weeks looked like was I had a week of normal training, and then that first week back, I had a 18-mile long run. My legs were feeling great, so I wasn't feeling like those 2 weeks where I didn't run much really impacted anything. If anything, I felt even better because I was like ready. My legs were fresh. I was ready to go. So on that 18-mile run, I tested out some paces that felt really good, and I was hitting some marathon pace miles in the middle. It was a progression run, so I did have some speed in the middle, and I felt really good about the marathon pace miles, and I felt really good about holding the pace that I held for 18 miles. That would have put me on pace for a 4:30, so was feeling awesome about that. I had another normal week of running, but at that point, I'm in taper. I peaked the first week back that I was back training for Richmond. That was my peak week, and then I had to go back into taper. So the next long run was 12 miles. 12 miles, being able to hold that pace, obviously after holding it for 18, felt good. Like, I was really, really good. So realistically, though, I had two long runs where I felt marathon pace. And looking at the paces that I was going to need to hold to run at 4:30, I was like, those felt great for 18 miles, but in my previous two marathon cycles, I have not trained for time. So as much as I was feeling confident about those paces, I also was feeling really intimidated because I just didn't know. Like, I was going into this a little bit blind in terms of what I could do. Historically, in the races that I've actually raced, so basically my second marathon and parts of my third marathon's training cycle, I've always had a hard time mentally holding on to the goal past mile 18. That's kind of where, I wouldn't say I hit the wall necessarily, but that's about where my legs start to feel like, okay, this is getting really hard. And that's where I start to slip. So I knew that going into the race, the strategy needed to be, I needed to come out a little bit quicker than I normally would. I can't be conservative at the front of the race because I'm going to need every single second at the end of the race to make up for it. So the mindset was completely different. Normally I'd go in and say, hold yourself back, start slow, don't start too fast. But even talking to my coach, we both kind of decided that, you know, this can't be too conservative. We need to be conservative, but not too conservative, because these are really aggressive paces compared to what I've been training at. The week of my 12-mile run, I got really sick too. I got a cold, just something going around at work. And I talked about this in a solo episode or in a mini episode a couple of weeks ago. But if I got sick for marathon number one, I would have been crashing out. Because it's marathon number five, and because I was kind of shoved into this training block, I was chilling. I was like, you know what? I'm a week out from the race. I can kick this cold in a couple of days if I stay on top of my food and I stay on top of my fuel and my liquids and all of that. So I just kind of stayed calm, made sure I was getting enough sleep, make sure I was getting enough fluids, and rode out the cold. I was able to kick it within 3 or 4 days, so that's good. But that 12-mile run, I was extremely congested. And if anything, that gave me some confidence because I was able to hit paces that I was hoping to hit even with a head cold. So I was feeling pretty good. Carb loaded really well the week of. I felt like my nutrition was there. I had all my fuel ready to rock. Like, I was feeling good until the day before my marathon when I got my period. If you're a guy or you don't have a uterus, the second day of your period tends to be the worst day of your period because that's when you get very, really crampy. That's when your flow is the heaviest. It's just like the most uncomfortable day of the period. It's usually like day two or three. And on that note, I'm not going to talk a lot about my experience running on my period. And I'm also not going to apologize for it because there's a big stigma around talking about periods when you have like a 50-50 female and male audience. But this is important for everybody. And I'm actually going to do its own solo episode on running on my period and the benefits that came from running on my period, because I did some research on it the night before the race because I was like, oh my God, is this going to hinder me? Like, I was thinking this was going to ruin my race in some way. And after doing some research, I found out that it's actually incredibly normal and a lot of people race a marathon on their period, and that there are some benefits to doing it. So I'm going to do that as its own spin-off solo episode. So make sure you check that out. It'll come out the same week as this episode. But nerves and all, and period and all, and after being sick, we held on to the plan of 4:30. I want to shout out my boyfriend, Sean, even though I thank him in person, but shout out to you, because the plan was to drive up and back to Richmond in the same day, because I got thrown into this really last minute. I didn't want to worry about finding lodging and finding a dog sitter for my dog, so we just decided that we were going to go up in the morning and drive back after, which meant that we were up at 2 a.m. to walk the dog, and that we were leaving by 3 a.m. so that we could get there for same day bib pickup by 5:30. It was a lot. But of course, I realized in my rush that morning, I had everything laid out the night before, but I forgot hair ties. And if you have long hair, you know that I'm not a wear your hair down kind of girl. I've got really curly hair. If I wore my hair down during a marathon, I would absolutely lose my mind. So after I got my bib, I went on a mission to find a hair tie from somebody. My boyfriend ended up finding somebody in the parking lot where we parked and at where I was getting ready and stretching. Found some lady that had hair ties. So I don't know who you are, but you are an angel for the day, because those hair ties, while they were a little flimsy for my hair type, they held everything in place for the race, and I am very grateful that we found you. After I kind of got ready and then we walked to the start line, I wasn't really feeling nervous for the race, which was new for me. I think it's partially because I was rushed into this training block, but I also noticed that I was feeling like kind of emotional about what was happening. It felt very full circle. It felt like I was meant to be there. I kept feeling very grateful that I get to race this year, that I get to run and race a race instead of just run with somebody else, because I didn't think that one, that was gonna, I was going to be able to have a race for myself this year. And two, if you remember, I wasn't thinking that I was going to be able to run normally for a really long time. So the fact that, you know, 11 months after my injury that I was back to racing and trying for a time goal, I was feeling very, very grateful and excited to be there. I just like couldn't believe that I had the opportunity to do this. So one game changer for me was I did rally voice notes. I sent it out to my like friends and family first, and then I ended up posting it so I could get some voice notes from anybody that, like, I'm in my internet friends basically, and even some people who are listeners of the show ended up submitting some voice notes, which are really those were really sweet. I would highly recommend, if you have a hard race coming up, to download the Rally app and send it out to all your friends and family, because when things got hard, that was exactly the push that I needed, knowing that people were rooting for me and pulling for me, and like especially the ones that knew the year that I had been through and were talking about that. Like I think I cried no less than 10 times during the race, but it was so impactful. Every time that I would feel like, gosh, this is getting hard, I'd hear another thing in my headphones that would just lock me back into place and keep my mind focused on the end goal. So highly recommend that. That was so impactful for me. So we'll break down the race. Normally, when I break down the race, I can go into a lot of detail, but running for a time, I was so locked in that I missed a lot of what was happening on the course. I remember for the first 10 miles felt great. The first 13 felt great. I was hitting all my paces. I was even a little bit ahead, but not so far ahead that I felt like that I'd gone out too fast or anything like that. But fueling well, hydrating well, the weather felt great. My run outfit felt great. I had everything on me. Everything was going to plan. And that continued for about 20 miles where I was on pace for a 4:30. All of my stops were good, so on and so forth. I did have one bathroom break that had to do with my period. I kept thinking that I was having some GI issues, but I really just think it was my period playing some tricks on me, because I didn't actually end up having to go to the bathroom once I went to a porta potty. That probably added 2 minutes to my time, so I could have PR'd by a little bit more, but all in all, I don't think I could have changed that. I was really convinced that I was having some issues. So that aside, everything went great up until mile 20. Mile 20 to 26, things did get hard, but I didn't ever hit a wall, which was awesome. I did lose my goal pace at mile 20, though. It really was just my legs, and I think it really had to do with just the fact that I didn't train to run a 4:30 for this marathon. I really feel like if I had done the proper strength work and the proper speed work and trained for a downhill marathon, which we'll talk about in a second, trained for Richmond, that 4:30 was doable on this race. But around mile 20 was where I my paces started to slip, and I was feeling like I was putting in the same amount of effort and moving the same amount, but my paces weren't reflecting that. So from then on out, I just kept listening to the voice notes, though so helpful. My coach left me one at mile 21 that just like absolutely lit a fire in me, and that was helping so much. And then I also found a 4:45 pace group that were grooving. I held on to them for from 20 to 24-ish, and then I broke ahead of them a little bit, and then I tried to hold on to somebody else that was in front of me that looked like they were doing much better than me. I just tried to kind of glue myself to those people that looked like they were doing well for the rest of the race. Now, one thing that I did see on the course map, and I've always wanted a downhill finish, so I was actually very excited for, but did not anticipate, was how downhill Richmond is for the last 5 miles of the race. It is, you're braking most of the time. It's gradual for a few miles, but then the last at least mile and a half is straight downhill. And I did not train downhill. I didn't really train on hills at all, because if you remember, Chicago is flat. So my quads were just absolutely getting eaten up for the last couple of miles, and I was braking a lot. And I really do feel like if I could have just let loose and ran those last few miles, because my legs were feeling okay, you know, I feel like I could have done a little bit better than I did. But because it was so downhill, and because when you're at mile 25 of a marathon, you don't know what's going to happen with your legs. Your legs could do anything. I was afraid to let loose on a downhill because I didn't want to faceplant in front of all these people. So I was braking a lot. My quads were murdered. I've never been so sore after a marathon. I'll talk about that in a sec. But yeah, it was downhill is... Steep downhills are not what I expected. That was rough on the quads. So around mile 23, I knew I was losing my 4:30 at that point. It had come and gone, right? So I shifted my mindset to my B goal. I let myself be disappointed for 0.2 seconds in myself for not being able to hit that 4:30. But then we got to go for a PR. I was getting so many texts on my watch that from my friends and family that were saying, you're going to PR, but you have to pick it up. I was slowing down by enough that I would have been really, really close to my PR. But if I wanted to PR by, you know, a couple of minutes, like I needed to get grooving. So again, I grabbed somebody that looked like they were doing better than me, faster than me, and I just glued myself to them for as long as I could. I changed the music up. I was doing everything that I could to just not walk, like just keep moving forward and just do it. Like this is the last, I kept thinking, this is the last marathon that you're going to run this year. Don't have any regrets at the finish. Like give it literally everything that you have. And I'm really excited about this and proud of myself for this. This is the first time that I ended a race at the same pace that I started. That last mile, quads burning and all, was like the most free that I've ever felt in a marathon. I don't even know how to explain it. It's looking down at my watch and seeing the pace that I was running that last mile was like, after everything that happened this year, this is my win right here. Being able to finish strong and finish healthy, this is my win. So I didn't get the A goal. So what? I ended up PRing by about 5 minutes. It was almost an hour faster than my other two marathons that year. it felt like I was getting so emotional because I felt like I was closing a chapter on a year of feeling not confident in myself as a runner. I had this high of first marathon, second marathon, to training for my third marathon, where it was up, 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 and then just getting like the confidence and knocked out of you, and the wind knocked out of you, and like all the momentum knocked out of you. I was feeling like everything was coming full circle around, and I was closing the chapter on this shitty year of running and moving into a new year of developing a better relationship with it. Like, it felt so great. So I crossed the finish line. I cried. I don't normally cry at finish lines, but I did cry on this one, like I said, because it felt so intentional and so special. And I did it for myself. And I have a hard time doing things for myself. I love this community. I love the people that I get to run with. I love hosting Run Club. Like, everything that I do, I feel like is hopefully to help this community. But like, getting to do something hard for myself, I realized is also very important to me. And it felt very full circle. After the finish line, I found my boyfriend. We got some pictures. I had to go and get my t-shirt because I did same day pickup. I wasn't able to get it at the expo. So I got my medal, my some pictures in my blanket that they gave out, and my t-shirt. And then we drove 2.5 hours home, and I rotted on the couch the rest of the day. It was perfect. Richmond was perfect. And I'm getting emotional. What the heck? Richmond was perfect. And every marathon this year taught me something different. I feel like Eugene taught me that I'm not invincible, and that this marathon distance and marathon training owes us absolutely nothing. You can want it so bad and have it not work out for you. Eugene also affirmed for me that I love running with other people, and I'm very passionate about getting first marathoners across the finish line because I want them to experience the same magic that I've, the same impact that entire experience has had on my life. That is so fulfilling for me. And I took that to Chicago, getting my mom across the finish line and helping her realize her goals, and that it's never too late to run a marathon. Like, anybody can do it at any point in their life. Getting her to that point was so fulfilling. But Richmond was perfect because I felt like I could give what I was able to give other people to myself. And I've just felt like I was running for a different version of myself. I was running for that girl that was training for her first marathon that didn't think that she could, didn't know if she could do it or not. And then she did. And then her life changed. It was really, really, really special. So now the big question is, what's coming up next? I've had a couple people message me and ask, and I've been really excited to tell people that for the first time in a really long time, I have no idea. And you have no idea how freeing that is. I've had a marathon on the calendar. I had two on the calendar after I ran marathon number two. So like, my year was already planned out for me, and just being able to have nothing on the calendar and just let whatever happens feels really good. I have merch coming out this week. If you're listening to this on Monday, the sweatshirts are probably already out. The hats and the beanies, which I haven't talked about yet, but the hats and the beanies, they'll be coming out shortly after. I've got a few things I'm working out there, but the hoodies are out. So that's what I'm working on now. And then I've also launched coaching. So I took my coaching certification while I was training for Chicago and have started to take on a couple of clients. So I feel free to book a discovery call on my website if that's something you're interested in. But I've really been loving these conversations and getting to continue to give back and help runners get to either their first finish line or a finish line since. So I've been doing some coaching. I have a bunch of MFM just community stuff, in-person stuff, not in-person stuff that I'm working on in 2026, just in the background that I haven't talked about yet. So I don't have any races on the calendar, but a big portion of my time that I was marathon training is going to be spent giving back to this community. So stay tuned. There's some fun stuff coming. But you also know that I'm already eyeballing some 2026 races, just potential stuff that I would love to run. I'm thinking that 2026 is my year of the half marathon. Maybe a full, maybe in the fall of something, if the right opportunity kind of comes across my plate. But I would really love to run like the Garmin half marathon or marathon series that's coming to Durham, North Carolina this year. There's a couple local halves that I would really love to run. I've talked to a couple of friends that are running half marathons like across the country. I would love to go run some races with them. So this is the year where I'm just going to see where the wind takes me. I'm not going to be so structured this year. And I know that those time goals will be there for me when I'm ready for them. So I'm just excited to see where the year takes me. I told you I was going to get a little sentimental at the end. So this is episode 100 of the podcast, which is absolutely insane. When I started this podcast, even listening to my first marathon story, when I told my story over the first episode, I listened to it the other day, and like, just hearing how not confident I was. If you watch that video, I'm I'm staring down at the microphone. I'm like slumped in my seat. I just like, I never thought that it would turn into this. And it's because of you all. And I just want to thank you again from like literally the I just want to thank you for following along on this journey with me. Whether you've been on the show, whether you're a long-term listener, whether you follow me on social media, whether you don't, I'm so happy that you're here. And I want you to know that if you run, you belong here. You deserve to reach the goals that you're striving towards right now. If you're in the middle of training, I know that it's hard, but know that this is where you're supposed to be. If you run, if you enjoy running, then you're a runner and you deserve to be here. And I'm so, so grateful that you have chosen me to listen to. It's crazy that we're 100 episodes in. I hope that we're around for 1,000 more episodes. There's so many runners that I want to interview and hear their story and keep proving to you all that there's no way to run a marathon and that anyone can run a marathon. So I just love you all. Thank you for sticking around for this long, and we'll see you on the next one.